I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Elizabeth Edwards. Elizabeth is the founder of Cincinnati Innovates. And Elizabeth, I know you're also an author, you're a consultant with venture capital firms as well as startup companies. So you pretty much live in this whole entrepreneurial world. Let's talk about Cincinnati Innovates, which runs until July 15th.
Sure.
Why did you start Cincinnati Innovates?
Well, I'm a native Cincinnatian, and I think like a lot of native Cincinnatians, we look around at all of these great Fortune 500, these corporations that have a ton of really creative and accomplished people. When I joined a venture capital fund here, a seed stage fund, I was anticipating that we would just have an incredible amount of deal flow as a result of the talented people that live here. And I was a little unpleasantly surprised that the phone wasn't ringing off the hook. And what I realized was at the time, and this was about 5 years ago, we weren't really promoting entrepreneurship. And entrepreneurship wasn't even really on the federal radar. We have a ton of great programs now at the federal, state, and local level to support entrepreneurs. But really at the time, you weren't hearing about it in the media. And so we created Cincinnati Innovates, which is a regional innovation competition to really highlight some of the great ideas and companies that people were starting right here in Cincinnati, but also just create an open call for folks to enter the competition because we give $100,000 in awards. So that's a pretty good reason.
It sure is. It's a big incentive.
Well, and it's fascinating. We went to your award ceremony last year, and it was really interesting to me some of the neat ideas people had for businesses.
Absolutely. And it's been a great experience for me as an early stage investor and also as an entrepreneur myself, just to see what people are working on. And it really goes far beyond the typical, you know, iPhone app idea or website idea. We have a ton of those, but we see products and we see really world-changing and life-saving technologies. One winner last year was a stroke diagnostic headband. So this was a group of UC students who put this together. They focused on solving the main problem of stroke, which is diagnosing which kind of stroke you have. And their technology is incredible. And it's, you know, something that will, you know, save lives and prevent disability. That's a huge thing. And that's something that's, you know, literally changing the world that we discovered just through the competition.
What I personally love about this competition is that you don't have to have a product developed already, correct? You don't have to have a full-blown business plan.
Exactly. And one of the main drivers behind the competition was just the fact that, hey, we have so many resources for entrepreneurs. It's not a business plan competition because a lot of entrepreneurs actually need help with writing the business plan and figuring out what the cash flow statement should look like and the budget. What we wanted to do was connect people with all of those resources. We have 25 sponsors, and you can go to CincinnatiInnovates.com and check out all the awards and check out all of the sponsors like Cooney Faulkner and Stevens. It's so important to get those mentors and that support, and we wanted to create a mechanism for that to happen.
You can actually make the application online until July 15th, and the actual award ceremony is right here on the campus of WNKU at Griffin Hall on
August 16th.
And again, if folks would like to go online, the website is
CincinnatiInnovates.com.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Today, our guest is Elizabeth Edwards. Elizabeth is the founder of Cincinnati Innovates and is also a venture capital advisor to people making and seeking venture capital investments. And Elizabeth, I know you teach a course in entrepreneurial finance, and 20 years ago, entrepreneurial finance was how many credit cards you could put together.
Right, exactly.
It's really changed, hasn't it?
Exactly. Well, you know, in a good way. I think that what you're seeing today is a lot of attention at the federal level, at the state level, at the local level on entrepreneurship and how important it is as a driver of economic growth and stability. You know, we've come a long way in formalizing the process of starting a business. And we have great mentors and accelerator programs here locally. A lot of advisors, you know, like Cooney Faulkner and Stevens, who contribute to these programs and help entrepreneurs get started, which is so important. And, you know, it's true, we didn't really hear a whole lot about entrepreneurship 5 years ago even. But I like to use the analogy that, you know, entrepreneurs are like the seedlings and saplings in the forest, and we really need them, you know, as part of the overall health of that forest, because we're actually pretty lucky here as a region that we have the big sequoias that are our Fortune 500 companies. companies. But the interesting fact is that the average age of a Fortune 500 company is about 40 to 50 years. That's their average lifespan. The average age of a Cincinnati Fortune 500 is about 115 years. So that tells me two things. One, they're well managed, so we're lucky there, but they're getting old. So we really need to, you know, pay attention and focus on, you know, what's the next chapter for our local economy.
There are a lot of, you know, family businesses that's been around for a long time. And again, to your point, historically, they haven't been sexy.
Exactly.
Right? Now, all of a sudden, there's so much focus and emphasis on entrepreneurs. And we keep talking about startups, which certainly every business has to have started up sometime.
Mm-hmm.
But to the extent as a community, I mean, if we all come together to help other startups, mm-hmm. then we all, it's just a win-win for everyone.
Absolutely. It contributes to the overall health and diversity of our economy. And really, the corporation age, you know, sort of the formalization of large companies in the public markets and that, you know, the capital flows. That has fundamentally changed a lot about our local economies. And I think we're kind of out to lunch on some of this, which is to say that we have a stock market that's based in, you know, mostly New York City, right? And so when we invest in publicly traded companies, there's a capital flow element there. There's also one when it comes to early stage capital. This is the capital that funds startup companies. 75% of the world's venture capital is in the U.S. 50% of it is in California. So we really, really have to pay attention to where we are investing our local dollars. It's so important to reinvest in our local economy.
How do you compete with that? Because we try to get these startups started, mm-hmm. and then a big fund out of California comes and puts investment in them. And in essence, they move.
That can absolutely happen. Generally happens at the earlier stages. So I don't know if you saw The Social Network, which is about, you know, the Facebook story and Mark Zuckerberg moving from the campus of Harvard out to Palo Alto and Accel Ventures, you know, making an investment in that company and really forcing that to happen. But we have a local company here, AssureRx, and they just raised a big growth round of capital from Sequoia and also Claremont Ventures, which are both based in California. There was no requirement that they move at that time. They have, I think, maybe 50, 100 people working there, so that would be an expensive move.
Again, the Cincinnati Innovates, a competition goes till July 15th in terms of applications. The website is
CincinnatiInnovates.com, and it's $100,000 in grants, so definitely enter.
Absolutely. For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Crystal, today our topic concerns valuations, business valuations. When you should get one, what's the benefit, how they're arrived at.
And the unfortunate truth is most people don't think about a valuation until the day they want to sell their business. What they really should do is understand what their business is worth now, and then what steps they have to do and take action upon in order to increase the value to where they need it to be when they do ultimately want to sell their business.
Yeah, you know, most people have some idea of the value of their business, but they don't have a formal conclusion as to what the value really is. A valuation will help you arrive at that. And to your point, it will show you what are the drivers of that value. And if you do want to sell your business in a few years, if you do a valuation today, you'll have a good idea of what you need to change to make that value greater.
You know, many businesses that are privately owned, the owner has their sweat, their blood, their tears into the business. There's a lot of emotion involved, and they think their business is worth a lot more than maybe what someone else would be willing to pay. So having a valuation, again, is one more objective way to get your arms around what your business is really worth so that you can create value, so that you can be able to sell it and generate cash flow so you can retire.
There's many methods of determining a value, but most of those methods are based on the income or the cash flow of the business, and really it's the future income and future cash flow of the business that determine the value.
Yeah, we always say that it's what you get to keep after tax when you sell your business, the investable cash proceeds, and certainly the more investable cash proceeds that you have, the better off you're going to be in retirement.
Well, that's right. And if you are contemplating retirement and you have a business, it's helpful to know what the approximate value of that business is to help in your retirement planning so you can determine whether you have enough to retire.
And even if you plan on keeping your business for the next generation or really never anticipate selling it at all, just having the valuation and knowing what your company's worth can really do nothing but help you determine how to even further increase the value of your company.
Well, and if you have a family that's going to succeed you as the owner of the business, it's helpful to have a valuation so that you could determine the strategy for transferring the ownership, whether that be, you know, via a sale, a discounted sale, or an outright gift.
And clearly this year, we have gotten a gift in the tax law because you can shift a great amount of wealth, $5 million per person, $10 million for a married couple. So having a valuation and really exploring some of those techniques for wealth shifting is just critical this year because it might not be there in the future.
Well, we probably won't know what next year's tax law is until sometime after the beginning of next year in terms of the estate and gift tax. But you're right, it probably is not going to be a better time in the future to make a substantial gift.
And there are professionals out there that provide valuations. So if you do go to the trouble of getting a valuation for your business, which you should, make sure that you engage someone who has done many valuations, that they adhere to the standards.
Yes, and depending on your need for the valuation, there's different levels of evaluation. You can have a limited valuation or a limited scope valuation, which may still give you the value, but will be a less extensive report than a full valuation.
And usually less expensive, too.
Right.
For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is Business Wise. Tom, one issue that is just always very difficult is when two partners or more than two partners are in a business and they decide they want to break up, just like a divorce.
Well, and it's just about as common. I think the statistics are that half or more than half of marriages end in divorce. I don't know what the statistic is for business partnerships, but I suspect it's just as great. And one thing that is prudent to do if you're in a partnership, meaning that you have more than one owner of a business, it's prudent to have a buy-sell agreement. And many companies do not do that.
And I think a lot of the reason is because when people make the decision to go into business together, everybody likes each other at that point, right? Or you would probably never go into business. So you really have to approach the relationship just like you would any other business relationship. Take the emotion out of it. Go into it assuming that, worst case, what would happen or what would this look like if we decided we didn't want to be in business together anymore?
Well, and if you think about it, the best time to determine what's fair in a buy-sell agreement is when you start the partnership, because you don't know whether you're going to be the buyer or the seller. So you just want to do what's fair.
And you can define in a buy-sell agreement, which should be in writing, actually how the price of the business will be determined. You can discuss what happens if someone dies, because you may not want to be partners with the spouse of that individual or
their future spouse.
Exactly. So it's just very important to take the time well in advance of entering into your business with this other person and develop a buy-sell agreement that you both perceive to be fair.
Yeah, and some of the things I've seen that don't work very well is when you say in your buy-sell agreement that you'll determine the value every year, because oftentimes that doesn't happen. And so then you have an agreement that says you're going to determine it every year, but you haven't changed it for 10 years.
So what people should be thinking about and considering in determining value for purposes of the buy-sell would include potentially a current valuation at the date of the triggering event.
Right. You can either have a formal valuation in that triggering event, or many companies have what I would call a formula for determining value. In other words, it's based on some multiple of income or based on book value or some combination of both or a weighted average of prior earnings, some formula that it just takes a calculation to determine value.
And then the question then becomes, how do you fund that? So let's fast forward, the buy-sell trigger occurs. You have to be prepared to be able to have the funds to pay out on the buy-sell agreement.
Or have a mechanism for having deferred payments. And sometimes that depends on what triggers the buy-sell. If it's triggered because of the death of an owner, it's pretty easy to fund that ahead of time
through
with
life insurance.
But if it's just a business separation, you have a difference in philosophy, one person wants out for whatever reason, that's a little harder to fund. And maybe that calls for installment payments of the purchase price versus a cash payment all at once.
So to your point, many buy-sell agreements include different types of formulas and payment terms depending on what triggers the buy-sell. You may have one method of calculating the valuation and payment terms if someone dies, as opposed to if somebody just decides they change their mind and they want to move off to a Caribbean island.
The thing that you shouldn't do is avoid having a buy-sell, because the worst thing you can do is try to negotiate that when you are having a problem or after your partner died.
For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Kelly Dowling. Kelly is the president and CEO of Bartlett. And Bartlett is a 113-year-old investment advisory firm based here in Cincinnati. And Kelly, you're also the very first woman president and CEO of this company. So congratulations on that.
Thank you very much, Crystal.
You know, Kelly, you can't turn on the news unless you are hearing something about the havoc economically that's going on around the world. How do you, as an investment advisor, help your clients navigate through all of that discussion and make good, solid investment decisions?
Well, it's difficult. We're just not now in a volatile market. We always have volatile markets. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just that sometimes they're clustered together in, you know, 1, 2, and 3 year periods of time. If you look back over history, they say around the world there is some kind of a crisis, financial crisis, stock market crisis, about every 9 months, of course, to varying degrees and different impacts on us. What we felt over the last 10 years is what becomes worrisome, because it feels like it's so much more frequent. And there's a lot of discussion in our industry going on about the frequency of these financial crisis bubbles, you know, real estate bubbles, technology bubbles, and how do we deal with it. So we have learned over our 113 years that we focus our clients on the longer term objective. And the way that we do that is primarily through diversification. So the diversification aspect of it says, well, if you have stocks in a portfolio and you need stocks for growth, although there will be volatility up and down, you might put 60% in your stocks and then 40% in the bond market. And the bond market is not volatile in the way that the stock market is. So it tends to mute that volatility.
Well, some of these assets that used to be, I guess, thought of as less correlated seem to be more related now. Is that just because the world is shrinking because so many businesses operate internationally?
Well, the whole globalization has had a big impact. So, for instance, where we might have diversified within a stock portfolio with domestic stocks and international stocks that used to be less correlated, they are much more correlated, particularly the developed countries like Europe are more highly correlated now than they used to be. So we look for other opportunities in emerging markets that are a little bit less correlated in that framework.
And so what do you say to someone who wants to be able to take advantage of some of the asset allocations that you're talking about, but yet would maybe like to get involved in these other alternative investments?
Well, that's really a client-specific question. So not everyone should have the same allocation. So we start with a little bit bigger picture and talk to the client about their objectives. Do they have medium or long-term objectives? What is their risk tolerance?
Well, that's a big deal, isn't it? Because you could have a couple who have very different risk tolerances. How do you manage that?
Well, that's a really tough question, particularly with couples. It comes up frequently that one is more conservative than another. So there are a couple of ways of getting to it. One is knowing your clients pretty well. But if it's a new client, we have questionnaires that we can use to try to get to that question. But it's really establishing the goal is what's most important, whether it's growth, income, total return.
So you individualize your asset allocation sort of on a client-by-client basis, I take
right.
it?
Right. And I think, you know, particularly in some of these newer asset classes like alternatives, which would include hedge funds, real estate, international real estate, strategic income opportunities, or even commodities. And so we've studied that a lot and started using that a couple of years ago because as a group, it's a much less correlated asset to stocks and bonds.
If folks would like to learn more about Bartlett, what's your website?
www.bartlett1898.com.
For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is Business Wise. Today, our guest is Kelly Dowling. Kelly is the president and CEO of Bartlett & Company, which is an investment advisor located here in Cincinnati. And Kelly, I know you meet with your clients and try to understand their goals and develop a strategy for their individual portfolio. How often with your clients, and really how often should anyone sit down and review that strategy to see if it's still the right one for them?
Well, we recommend at least on an annual basis. I also recommend that it's important to sit down with your accountant and your attorney in the same meeting so that all of your financial advisors are hearing the same thing at the same time to give you the best advice. It's a more holistic approach in that then all of them know everything about a client and can give you better advice rather than an isolated situation.
That makes a lot of sense, and we actually recommend the exact same thing because if a client has a large capital gain, and possibly they have loss carryovers or they have other types of losses, that's certainly something that as an investment advisor, I'm sure you'd want to know so that you can help manage their investments from a tax point of view as well.
Absolutely. And this year is a really important year in that regard to make sure that you're in contact with your clients' CPAs, because this is, you know, a year in which there's going to be some changes in tax laws. And we don't think taxes are going down. We think the capital gains rates will go up. Tax rates will go up on ordinary income. And so there has to be a lot of planning. And so the recommendation that we're generally giving to most of our clients is to take those capital gains this year as much as you can. And we've been recommending that for the past couple of years in anticipation of this change.
Do you think it's going to create a bias towards other types of investments, or do you think taxes don't drive the investment strategy that much?
Well, taxes shouldn't drive the investment strategy. I mean, they're part of it, they're a consideration that you make. But, you know, we've been in a very low tax rate environment for some time. We've had higher tax rates in the past. And so I think that in the end, it will be, not that it will be a non-event. Clients always grumble about having to pay taxes, but, you know, tax rates are going to go up. I think
there'll just be more pressure on investment advisors to get greater returns, right?
That's right.
So I think we all are in agreement that taxes are going up. Do you think people have anticipated that? So they've already built that into their emotions?
I don't think so. I think that people are anticipating it. I think the market is anticipating that now. Right now, the market's at a fairly low level this year, and we think that that is discounting a lot of the things that are yet to occur this year that could be negative or cause some volatility in the market. It's a leading indicator, so it tells you what's about to come. So we just generally think that right now it's a good low valuations to be buying stocks for down the road, and you know, trying to focus people past December 31 of this year into, you know, the
sure.
next year.
Are there any particular industry segments that you think are good options?
Well, you know, one concern could be the banking sector. We have a little bit heavier weighting in the industrial sector. Mm-hmm. We're evaluating what happens in healthcare and looking for some opportunities in the healthcare industry.
And if folks want to learn more about Bartlett, the website is
www.bartlett1898.com.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Dan Bissig. Dan is the CEO and founder of College and Beyond. And Dan, what advice do you have to people who have kids off to college soon?
Well, most importantly, you got to take the time to make sure that you do the research and connect the dots on the entire process. It truly is a maze of complexity. And so the family's got to do a lot of things to make sure that they've got all their ducks in a row and they're prepared for all the surprises that are yet to come.
You know, Dan, one of the good things about looking at colleges nowadays is there's a lot of information available online. Sometimes there's so much information, it's hard to distinguish.
The good news is that there are some resources that are out there now to help families, in particular on the websites at the colleges themselves. And what I'm talking about are these new items called the net price calculators. That is a fantastic first step that families should do, especially when they're trying to figure out the cost.
Wait a minute, I want to write this down.
Yeah.
Net price calculator?
Net price calculator. Every single college out there who offers federally backed money has to have a net price calculator on their website. And there's different versions of it, but the bottom line is it allows the family to go to that site, go ahead and plug in some information, and then based on that, get a pretty good idea what it might cost to send their son or daughter to that college.
I've actually used that at a few colleges, and not only does it tell you, you know, the published price, but if you put in, like, test scores and grades, it doesn't make you a promise, but it'll also give you an indication of what type of scholarship money you might be receiving.
You have to realize, again, it's going to be different from school to school because, as I always say, not all colleges play by the same rules. And so you just really have to do enough research and have realistic conversations with your kids about the kind of schools that they might pick.
You know, one of the things I found when we actually go to on college visits is every school will tell you, you don't need to worry about finances. You know, if you need money, we'll give it to you. But their idea of needing money and yours might be a lot different.
The biggest frustration I have with the colleges is that they use this word financial aid loosely. And in particular, one of the big surprises that families get is a lot of times when they get their award letter in the spring of the student's senior year, they discover that it's loaded with all kinds of loans, both student loans and parent loans. And that's an unexpected surprise that they really don't like.
Is it just a trend that colleges are just, it's more expensive in tuition?
It is. Yeah, it continues to go up. In fact, if you look over about the last 20 years, it's up 439%. And if you look at the median income for families, about 147%. So that's a huge divide.
How do you advise families when they are starting to look for their, on behalf of their child, for schools and career paths? How do you teach a child that, hey, you know, there really is and should be a return on your investment in this calculation?
It really comes down to having the hard reality conversations with your kids. You've got to have a good, clear understanding of what are the job opportunities out there right now. For example, computers are always going to be a hot topic, but there are some positions that absolutely have dried up. And so have those tough conversations with your kids. And then also, most importantly, have the money talk with your student as early as you can in the process.
What is the money talk from your point of view?
The money talk is sitting down and having a realistic conversation about what mom and dad can comfortably afford to put towards college. Unfortunately, it's like the elephant in the room that families rarely want to talk about. And yet, if they don't, what's going to happen again is in the spring of the year, they're going to run into some real surprises and challenges.
For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is Business Wise. Today, our guest is Dan Bizig. Dan is the founder and CEO of College and Beyond. And Dan, your whole job is helping families prepare for college, primarily for the children, but you work with both the children and the parents, right?
I do, yeah. I actually do what I refer to as student positioning, which is truly helping the student understand what they can do to help reduce the college cost, find the right school, the good fit, and all those types of things. And I also work with the parents to figure out how are you going to pay for it.
What are some of the tools you look at to help families be prepared for the prices?
Going into it, families have to understand that if loans are going to be part of the solution, and it often is, you've got to be smart about the loans that they take out. Federally backed loans are still the best option, although I have to say I wish that they would reduce the interest rates. You have to be smart about it. You have to educate the kids so that they understand what they're getting themselves into with those loans so that in the future, when they graduate, they can deal with the payment and balance that payment against all the other fixed expenses they're going to have just for life. You know, in addition to that, that student may have to work, whether it's a job at the college, which is a work-study position. It may be that they have to do summer co-ops, which I always encourage kids to look at, because not only are you positioning yourself from a possible job in the future, but you're helping to pay as you go along as well.
Well, not to mention there's some correlation between work and money. They feel like they've gotten some ownership, skin in the game as it relates to their education. They might take it more seriously.
That's right, yeah. And I mean, the scary part about it is if you look at the last 10 years, dropout rates at the schools have gone up from 25% to almost 30%. And the number one reason is because of the debt load, the burden that these kids are feeling, and the jobs that they're having to take out.
Speaking of debt load, that's something that really, in my mind, it floors me. When I listen to the magnitude of student loan debt right now, it's greater than credit card debt.
It is, yeah. Can you imagine $1 trillion in college debt that's out there for students by themselves? That doesn't even include the amount that the parents have. And so it's a huge problem, and the only way to curtail that is to have the smart conversations with your students early in the game. There's a huge difference between free money and debt money, and unfortunately, they're both called financial aid.
Money's too easy, I think, for college kids these days as it relates to loans.
It is, and it's because loans have become such an easy solution. Students can take out $5,500 as a freshman without a co-signature, without a job, without a credit score.
And now you can't get a credit card with that.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, imagine that. So we're taking out this loan, and the student then can do it every single year throughout their time in college. And yet, in the end, there's going to be a payment that's due and you can't walk away from it.
And what you do is you'll come in and help a family. You'll work with a student because sometimes, and I'm not saying anything of personal knowledge, although sometimes it's easier for a student to listen to a third party than their own parents, isn't it?
It absolutely is. I mean, the way I describe my role sometimes is I'm a warm teddy bear, and at other times I'm a cold, prickly grizzly bear. And it's because I speak the truth to the kids and to the parents to help them out.
And if people want information about your company, College and Beyond, and contact you, what is your contact information?
Well, first they can visit my website, which is collegeandbeyondllc.com, or they can send me an email at danbissig@collegeandbeyondllc.com, or my phone number, 859-283-2655.
Thanks for being our guest, and thanks for listening to Business Wise. I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner, and this is Business Wise. My guest today is Mark Reitzes. Mark is the regional president for Huntington National Bank, and Mark Huntington is so graciously the presenting sponsor for the upcoming Association for Corporate Growth Awards, which is occurring on Wednesday, May the 16th, down at the Hyatt at 5 o'clock in the evening. The Association for Corporate Growth really celebrates this whole function is celebrating companies and businesses that are out there doing deals. What are you seeing in your work at Huntington in terms of companies doing deals? Is it more brisk?
Yes, it is. We have now termed Huntington Bank is in the Midwest, and we're no longer calling it the Rust Belt. We're calling it the Recovery Belt. And by so many metrics, it is leading the national economy, not only in job growth, but also importing and exporting, particularly in the manufacturing sector, automobiles. And we're also seeing it in early stages of new type of energy development, shale development, particularly up in the northeast section of Ohio, as well as throughout West Virginia.
There are a lot of people stepping out of the comfort zone again, taking a risk, doing a deal. And that's what we're celebrating for these Association for Corporate Growth Awards, aren't we?
We sure are. And you know, it's interesting that I think there's been a lot of pent-up demand on the sidelines since the banking crisis occurred back in 08 with the financial crisis, I should say. And so a lot of deals were on the sidelines for many years. And I think so there's pent-up demand. Buyers and sellers' expectations of what prices should be have come more together now. And the financing ability to pull these deals together is starting to become more apparent. Financial institutions are really on the hunt to try to grow their balance sheets, particularly in such a low-yield environment. Volume of deals has become even more important for banks.
What makes a lot of sense, because a lot of corporations do have a lot of cash sitting on their balance sheets, which aren't earning a lot of money in interest. And if they can take that cash, use it, leverage it to make an acquisition that really enhances their bottom line, it just makes a lot of good financial sense.
Yes. You know, the Fed has kept interest rates low for so long. I think people are finally saying, well, end of 2014, interest rates are going to be low. I can't earn anything on my investments. Let's go out and do deals. And you're right. Public companies are still holding record amounts of cash.
What do you look for when you make decisions about who to finance?
A lot of times, Crystal, deals are being brought to us by investment bankers. So the business, the acquirer, the one that's interested in buying a business, tends to hire someone to go out and search in some of the genre that they're interested in purchasing. And so by the time it usually comes to us, it's somewhat packaged relative to terms and things like that. Our big thing is we look strong at historical standards, how both companies have done, what are the synergies of bringing them together? Is it a strategic purchase or is it a financial purchase? The difference there being financial purchase is strictly one that's just buying it, not in the industry already, maybe a roll-up in a PE firm type of portfolio.
Private equity,
I'm sorry. Thank you. And then versus strategic, where the company's already in the business and maybe they're looking to combine, take a competitor out of the way, if you will.
Well, and that is very exciting. And again, we are celebrating companies who have done this past year and the last few years, the Association for Corporate Growth Dealmaker of the Year. And I will have to say, it is probably the who's who in the business world here in our Cincinnati region that attends this event.
Absolutely. The who's who of the zoo does show up at this, Crystal. And we're very, very, at Huntington, we're very proud and honored to be the premier sponsor.
And if folks would like more information about the event or if they would like to attend, it is down at the Hyatt. It's on May the 16th from 5 until 9. Mark, you will be there. I will be there. The number to call is 866-500-ACGC, or you can just visit acgcincinnati.org. For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner. I'm with Cooney Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Crystal Faulkner, and this is Business Wise. My guest today is Mark Reitzes. Mark is the regional president for Huntington National Bank, and Huntington has, for years now, been the presenting sponsor for this remarkable event that's occurring down at the Hyatt on May 16th. It's the Association for Corporate Growth Dealmaker of the Year Awards, and it will be a huge event. We're celebrating five or six different organizations and entrepreneurs who have been very involved in the merger and acquisition area in the last few years. Why is it important for Huntington to be the presenting sponsor for this?
These companies that we're celebrating and these entrepreneurs, Crystal, they're the ones that really are leading the Midwest economy, if you will, out of the doldrums. And it's all about employment and driving the business climate, driving the economic viability of our area. So we think it's an important organization, but also we're very grateful and honored to be part of the process, if you will, in honoring these companies that are doing so much for our area.
And some of the award winners this year, just to quickly name them, because it is a huge honor to be selected as an award winner. Maybe you can just share a few of the awardees.
These are very familiar names. We have Ampac, there's been Promach, Hillenbrand, a large corporate company, Home Care by Blackstone. We've honored Rick Maxwell as an entrepreneur, The Brandery, which is a financial service provider, along with North Creek Mezzanine, which provides sub-debt financing to help acquisitions get done. So there's just a sample of some of the, not only the companies, but individuals that really make a difference in our community.
To that point, Mark, I know that you are the regional president for Huntington National Bank, but Huntington is really all over the Midwest. You actually are the largest SBA lender in the state of Ohio, so you're right there in the front lines in terms of what businesses are doing in this economy. How do we stack up here in our region with the rest of the country?
Well, you know, the Midwest economy has been a really, really good comeback story for us. It's leading the country in so many different areas relative to employment, income, consumer spending. Companies are moving into the Midwest, as we've seen, particularly with the Jobs Ohio program, as well as we're seeing this in Michigan, which is part of our footprint as well. And while large parts of the country are still slumbering, the Midwest economy is demonstrating really, really healthy growth.
It's fascinating to me, and I don't know if it's just great PR, but it seems like I can't turn on the TV these days without seeing Ohio being named at the top of some list in terms of job creation and business backing and things like that.
It is. You know, Ohio has a lot to offer, particularly in the manufacturing end related to automobile sector. So we've seen significant growth, as we know, in that sector, import, export in so many industries, and also the new energy, whether it be shale development, things up in the Northeast, as well as the Southeast part of Ohio and over into West Virginia. New forms of energy are being developed, and Ohio and West Virginia are really positioned well to take advantage of that.
And it's really remarkable, the companies that remain in the energy, I think, that is now instilled in these people because of what they've been through.
Sure has. Many of these businesses have had the opportunity to re-engineer themselves, reinvent themselves. Companies that you would normally think is just normal construction companies, getting into the energy sector has required them to retool, think about how they go to market with their business plan, and as a result, have reinvented themselves in ways they probably would have never imagined a few years ago.
All right, real quick, we are celebrating the Dealmaker of the Year Award. It's on May the 16th down at the Hyatt. If you'd like information, the number to call is 866-500-ACGC. For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner. I'm with Cooney Faulkner and Stevens, your business advocate.